This is The Guardian.
Jetzt ist Herbst und bald stehen schon wieder die Feiertage vor der Tür. Das kann auch für Hunde ganz schön stressig sein. Viele Vierbeiner reagieren unter anderem mit einer gestörten Verdauung und das ist wiederum Stress für ihre Besitzer. Aber es gibt schnelle und einfache Hilfe. Das Probiotikum Purina ProPlan Fortiflora. Streu einfach einen Beutel über das tägliche Futter. Die außergewöhnliche Zusammensetzung mit lebenden guten Darmbakterien stellt das Gleichgewicht im Darm wieder her. Natürlich kannst du ProPlan Fortiflora auch präventiv oder bei alltäglichen Verdauungsbeschwerden einsetzen. Es unterstützt auch bei Ernährungsumstellungen oder Antibiotikaeinnahme. Purina ProPlan Fortiflora. Jetzt auf shop.purina.de.
Wünschst du dir jemanden, der dich versteht wie kein anderer? Jemand, der deine Wünsche wahr werden lässt und mit dir das schönste Abenteuer deines Lebens erleben möchte? Die Commerce-Plattform Shopify revolutioniert Millionen von Unternehmen weltweit. Mit Shopify richtest du im Nu deinen Online-Shop ein. Ganz ohne Programmier- oder Designkenntnisse. Dank der effizienten Einrichtung und intuitiven Social-Media- und Online-Marketplace-Integration kannst du über Instagram, eBay und Co. werben und verkaufen. Neue Zielgruppen zu erreichen war noch nie so einfach. Shopify bietet auf einer einzigen sicheren Plattform alle Tools, um dein Online-Business aufzubauen. Kostenlos testen und dein Business der Welt präsentieren. shopify.de/try besuchen. Einfach shopify.de/try eingeben und loslegen. Made for Germany. Powered by Shopify.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Happy Christmas, everybody. It's the world famous Christmas special. Four of us just answering your questions and happy that for just 1 hour we don't have to talk about Arsenal's corners or consider whether Chelsea are title challengers or if Ange should stick to his principles or PSR or VAR or PAPSAR or Ibrahim Bar. We have a Glendening Wilson Bruin around our Christmas table and a host of Christmas messages from the rest of the family who weren't invited. Thanks for the messages, which cover pretty much as wide a range of football and life as you could imagine. And thanks for listening. If you didn't, we probably wouldn't be doing it, and then we'd have to get proper jobs. And if we're honest, that ship has sailed for all of us now. This is the Guardian Football Weekly Christmas Special. On the panel today, Barry Glendening, welcome.
Ho, 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 Max.
Hello, Jonathan Wilson.
Happy Christmas, Max.
And happy Christmas, John Bruin.
Compliments of the season to you all.
Marvellous. We start with some very exciting news from the Offaly Express, which says, could Guardian Football Weekly podcast host oust Santa and turn on the Christmas lights in Burr in 2025? Listening to the latest episode of the podcast, it certainly sounds like Burr native Barry Glendening would be up for the job and Max Rushton would be up for joining them, etc., etc., etc. The greatest line of it says, as the always excellent banter continued, Barry... Why are you laughing, Wilson? Max said he would not rest until Barry got to the countdown and pushed the button. To the end of the article, it says, to the organisers of the Burr Christmas lights, the choice appears to be yours. Santa or Barry Glendening and the Football Weekly team to turn on your lights in 2025. Surely you won't hold his hurling skills or apparent lack of them against him. This is exciting news, Barry. We have a campaign for the year.
This is huge, Max. This is absolutely huge. The Burr sort of art centre is literally across the street from my mother's house. Yesterday's idle chit-chat about me turning on the Burr lights has now officially gathered traction.
Yeah.
I put it in my Burr WhatsApp group, and one of my friend's sisters has already said she will put you up if we go to Burr next December. So
wow, how exciting. Will she put my whole family up?
Yeah, probably.
That's not the arrangement.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So it sounded slightly dubious to me. I was like, this is not, if I'm going to plan to have an affair, Barry, I don't think this is where I'm going to do it.
Now, just can I be clear? You're the one who dragged this into the gutter. not me.
Does she perhaps have a stable out back where you could...
Could find accommodation.
Here comes Mr. Religion.
Ah, absolutely. Yeah. Are you saying I'm the after David Icke, the third coming of Jesus, Wilson?
I was thinking you was more in the cuckold Joseph role, but...
Right, okay. Fair enough. I like the way how you phrased it in such a football-y way as well, didn't you? Just there in the Joseph role. Anyway, we will keep... it's not like me to hammer a joke, and it's not a joke, of course, because... Burr, we're coming for you, 2025.
I will not have Burr condescended to on this podcast.
Noted. I was just going to say, that they always say if a newspaper headline has a question mark in it, the answer is always no. So I predict this won't happen. So,
well, the thing is, I think it really could happen.
Okay.
But it all hinges on Max, basically, and his availability.
Right. Okay.
Early next December. That's the only sticking point I can think of.
If we planned a lot,
I think we would fill Borough Arts Centre. It's about 400, 450.
Okay.
I think we could fill it. I'm pretty confident we'd fill it, or at least not embarrass ourselves. They could put, one of those black curtains across halfway, like they do when we do some of our bigger venues on live shows. And there's 2,000 empty seats.
Well, I look forward to it. But let's see, we probably need to plan a bit more of a tour. And then I'll see if I can get it past Mrs. Rushton. I mean, I know she doesn't listen to this, so it's fine. We can plan it openly on this. Harry says, it's Christmas Day at your place. You can invite four managers, past or present, to come and celebrate with you. They will bring their own booze. You must provide their food. Who are you inviting and why? And will you be cooking them turkey? Jonathan Wilson.
I think the booze aspect is key here. So yes, I'll be cooking them turkey, all the trimmings, stuffing. I'm very proud of my sausage meat stuffing, the sage and onion, bread sauce. I think bread sauce is essential to Christmas. Bread crumbs, which I'm led to now, I thought it was universal, but apparently it's a northeastern thing. Nobody else seems to have heard of it.
Just for the record, I have heard of bread crumbs, but I wouldn't.
they go so well with turkey. The sort of buttery crunches, it gives a bit of texture, and they soak up the gravy as well. Cold the next day when you have any leftovers with a jacket potato. Mm. Magnificent.
Because turkey isn't dry enough. You really need something to soak up that gravy and make it even more dry.
If your turkey's dry, you're just not cooking it properly. I think if turkey's drier than chicken. It's harder to cook than chicken, but it should be moist. Have you thought of not cooking it for as long?
That's a good idea. Who are your managers?
So, right, I'm going to have Ugo Meisel, the great Austrian, because I think... at Zweigelt or maybe Spätburgunder would go really... I think it goes really well with turkey. I always have Spätburgunder. So he can bring one of those nice sort of light, earthy...
I mean, that could be a wine or a footballer. I don't know, but carry on.
Austrian Reds. I'd bring in Martin Bukovy, who I think is the greatest tactical mind of the 20th century. Famously grumpy man. So when he was at Olympiakos, he didn't have a TV. This is in the early 60s, but he loved the cinema. So after training, he'd go to the street in Piraeus where all the cinemas were. And he'd go into the box office and he'd say, "Is my wife here?" And if they said yes, he'd move on to the next cinema because he didn't want any distractions. He wanted to watch his film alone in his own thoughts. And I approve of that. I'm very much like that myself in the cinema. But he could bring some Tokaj to go with the Christmas pudding. Valery Lobanovsky, he could bring some nice Armenian cognac, which I think was his tipple of choice, to go with the coffee afterwards, which then leaves you free. Who's the other one you're going to bring in? You could bring in somebody French to get some champagne to start with, but I think I'd just go for Marcelo Bielsa. I think Bielsa and Lobanovsky discussing pressing would be... That is what you want over the sprouts.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. You speak for everyone there, John.
Sorry.
Literally, listeners around the world all saying exactly that in unison. They won't have heard you say it because of they were saying it at the same time. Come on then. I'm hoping, John, for a very root one Christmas dinner from you.
Yes. Yeah. I had a few thoughts about this, but a couple of managers that probably need a Christmas... at the moment, Russell Martin and Gary O'Neill recently departed.
I mean, they're still alive, but,
Well, are they, though? in the world of football. I was thinking maybe with Johan Cruyff because, Russell Martin could tell Johan Cruyff where it all went wrong for him. But then again, I was thinking, like, do I invite someone who is a bit more... You've got two choices. You've got... Do you want someone to have, like, an Arthur Fowler Christmas? Yeah? Someone who's, you know, an angry manager or a miserable manager. So...
Who's stolen the money from the club raffle?
But let's not go into that. But, you know, but we... Let's give the lawyers an easy Christmas.
No, he literally stole the money from the club. Well, he from did. The well, raffle.
That was to do with depression, being the 80s, all that. I mean, go and watch those classic episodes. And I also thought, so someone like famously miserable managers like your Ron Saunders or your Alf Ramsey's, but then I thought, nah, you need a Route One manager. And who's the king of the Route One manager? Sam Allardyce would be cracking, obviously. He'd bring the
booze.
He
would be really good. He'd be great, Sam.
He'd be great. But one that I've actually chatted to, and maybe I've told you this anecdote before, in fact, I'm sure I have, actually.
It's never stopped any of us before.
It's Tony Pulis. And Tony Pulis anecdote is I had been to the wedding of a dear friend up on the Wirral. But my assignment for the Saturday was to go to Southampton at Manchester United in the David Moyes season. I think you know the result. You can work it out. But as I hung over, traversed the world's oldest railway from Liverpool to Manchester, the world's worst railway as well, actually, I was hung over to buggery, let's put it that way. And you know, when you're so hungover, everything is almost like psychedelic. And like the anxiety, you don't know whether your bowels might go off at any point, you know, the full thing, you just completely like. So I sit in this room at the Manchester United press room, which to this day remains the type of place that the Gestapo would have thought a bit uncomfortable. You know, it's not a particularly warm place to sit with big lights beating out. And then suddenly Tony Pulis comes and sits next to me and starts chatting as if we are best friends. Because this is what Tony Pulis does. He's a very sociable guy. And we start chatting, you know, oh, what about the game today? And I'm thinking, my head's falling out here and I am chatting to Tony Pulis. This is a bit weird. Well, so I've just about righted myself. Who should come in through the door next? Sir Geoffrey Boycott. Hello, Tony. Hello, Geoffrey.
Lovely.
And they soon start talking, involve me in the conversation. And my head is just falling off at this point. I'm just like, oh, God, what is going on? So I said to Sir Geoffrey, please take this seat. And I went and sat outside and breathed in the sort of winter air of Old Trafford, the damp air of Old Trafford, to try and pull myself together. But Tony Pulis, very nice man, I'm told, always gets his round in as well. So there you go.
And serving just Boddington's?
Boddington's bitter. If Russell Martin was there, I know he's a vegan, so that could be interesting. Vegan cuts. Johan Cruyff, sort of Dutch Christmassy type of thing. That could be interesting. Gary O'Neill doesn't look like he eats much, but you just don't know. Maybe he's just one of those people.
Have another plate, Gary. And he's
he might be one of those that it can just eat all day and put on no weight.
No, absolutely right.
Nervous
that
energy.
That Pulis boycott anecdote reminds me of at one point being caught in between David Bumble Lloyd and Jeremy Kyle at Cheltenham.
Wow.
Thinking, what conversation am I in here? This is ridiculous. Barry, who's coming to dinner?
Well, interestingly, I once had lunch at Cheltenham and was seated beside Jeremy Kyle, and he was incredibly nice, really polite, very friendly, you know, asking me questions about me and taking an interest in me, which is always a good sign of what someone's like in real life. And then you see him on television and it's just like, wow, poles apart.
And then someone came from behind the curtain and accused you of being the father
of fathering their child. Well, the answer to the question, which manager ... is always Sean Dyche, and I'm going to have Sean Dyche round for Christmas dinner. I reckon he'd bring
Stella
12 cans of Guinness, probably a bottle of brandy as well. I'm going to have Ian Holloway because I love Ian Holloway. Mm-hmm. He divides opinion a bit, but I love him. Hopefully he bring Mrs. Holloway, who's also a very entertaining lady. I've got to bring Peter Reid, mainly because I haven't met a huge number of football managers in real life, but Peter Reid is one of them, and he just walked into the room and went, "Hello, everybody, I'm Peter Reid," and he was wearing really skinny jeans and Winkelpicker boots, and I thought, you know, he must have been about 60-odd, but he was able to carry it off, so I was impressed with that. And he's just a lovely, very entertaining guy. We had common ground in that a friend of mine was signed by him to play for Sunderland many, many years ago. And we got talking about him, and Peter Reid, I'm going to say, was not hugely complimentary. something I never tire of reminding my friend about. And I'm going to bring Roy Hodgson as well.
Oh, lovely.
Purely because Ellis James went to the PFA or some fancy dinner one year. He was invited along and he was at the same table as Roy Hodgson. He was hugely impressed by the fact that before the dinner started, Roy Hodgson stood up and went around. He was England manager at the time. He went around and introduced himself to every single person at the table. I don't know, it was 7 or 8 people. I'd quite like that because if it was Christmas dinner in my house, I'm pretty confident I would be the only person who knew who he was.
But presumably Sean Dyche and Peter Reid would know.
Oh, okay, they'd know who he is.
You'd hope so.
Also, Roy Hodgson hates Parmesan, but you wouldn't have that at Christmas Day, would you? So that's fine. No complications.
I've lunched with Roy Hodgson. I didn't notice the Parmesan. But obviously the two most important times I've seen Roy Hodgson is once, and I can't retell the Mick Hucknall Pelé anecdote.
Oh, go on, yeah. Man.
It is. Come on, it's good. It's good, isn't it? If you haven't heard, if you have, you could just fast forward.
I've sat next to Roy on a plane.
Very nice.
That very nice guy.
Did he hog the armrest?
No, he's one of the most. And then we won the same flight back, and all these. It was one of the European finals. And Roy waved at me as I came back to sort of say, you know, and we sat next to each other again. And all the crew from a radio station that you two might work at looks really disappointed that he was talking to a scruff like me rather than noticing them.
So, I'll tell the Mick Hucknall Pelé anecdote if you haven't heard it. If you have heard it, it doesn't matter. But it's a charity dinner. It's a really good one, Nordoff Robbins. It's a great charity. I think Richard Keys is hosting. I think it's Keezy. It might be Jeff Shreves. My apologies to whichever one isn't. And Pelé is the guest of honour. It's pretty cool. It's Pelé. And then he just at some point stands up and goes, and as everybody knows, you know, Pelé's great friend is Mick Hucknall. They're virtually best friends. And everyone nods.
That's got to be Richard Keys.
Well, maybe it's Richard Keys. And everyone nods and I'm looking around going, that doesn't seem right to me. And as everyone knows, you know, he's the godfather to Pelé is the godfather to Mick Hucknall's son, or the other way around. Either way, I'm not sure. Everyone's going with it, and I'm like, "What the fuck is this? This is ridiculous." And then they said, "And as everyone, and of course, Mick wouldn't miss this night for anything, ladies and gentlemen, Mick Hucknall." And then Mick Hucknall walks on stage in very sort of tight white jeans and Winkelpickers, and sings "Stars" to Pelé. The thing is, in between, I am watching this, and the two people in my eye line in the table next to me are Roy Hodgson and Ray Lewington.
Did you think someone had spiked your drink?
I was, do you know what? I was just looking around for someone to confirm that this was ridiculous. So I'm watching Mick Hucknall sing "Stars" to Pelé, while Roy Hodgson and Ray Lewington they're sort of looking around, but when they look back, they're looking at me, and they're both mouthing the words to "Stars."
Oh, yes.
I mean, I would say it's the greatest musical performance. But the other time I saw Roy Hodgson was at the PFAs, where the musical act was Wretch 3-2. And so Wretch 3-2 came on. A lot of people had left. And in my eye line again was Roy Hodgson tapping his feet as Wretch 3-2 rapped along. And if I can tell my Peter Reid anecdote, which may not make the cut.
Oh, I think we've heard this one as well.
Have you heard this one?
Oh, you've told them all, mate, many times.
I'm at a charity dinner.
I think you can tell it and we can
bleep out.
Producer Joel can judiciously use the beep button.
I'm at a charity dinner. There's one spare chair. I don't know who's sitting there. And Peter Reed walks up. He looks at me and he goes, Wenger is a fucking Peter Reed, nice to meet you. And I was like, that's some way of introducing yourself to anybody. But anyway, yeah, good choices, everybody.
Do you think if he was sitting beside Arsene Wenger, would he introduce himself the same way?
I don't know. Anyway, what's good is we've got through one question. Producer Joel says, I was once sat between the Wombats and Katie Hopkins in the Global Canteen.
That's good.
That's amazing, isn't it? Anyway, that'll do for part one. Hopefully get through more questions in part two. But here are a few festive messages from the great and good of Football Weekly.
Max, Barry, listeners, listeners who send nice messages, listeners who send other messages. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
To everyone that appears and works on Football Weekly, honestly, it's been brilliant to be a part of it this year. Long may it continue. But most of all, Happy Christmas to all the listeners and to Robbie Musto. I hope you all have a brilliant one and that Santa's very, very kind to you. Up the Villa, Happy Christmas.
Hello, it's Jonathan Liu. Merry Christmas to everyone. Thanks for listening. Thanks for putting up with my nonsense. I've talked some absolute bollocks on the pod this year. Maybe some interesting stuff, but mostly bollocks, I think. So thanks for dealing with that. Have a great Christmas and New Year, and I'll see you soon.
Jetzt ist Herbst und bald stehen schon wieder die Feiertage vor der Tür. Das kann auch für Hunde ganz schön stressig sein. Viele Vierbeiner reagieren unter anderem mit einer gestörten Verdauung. Und das ist wiederum Stress für ihre Besitzer. Aber es gibt schnelle und einfache Hilfe. Das Probiotikum Purina Pro Plan Fortiflora. Streu einfach einen Beutel über das tägliche Futter. Die außergewöhnliche Zusammensetzung mit lebenden guten Darmbakterien stellt das Gleichgewicht im Darm wieder her. Natürlich kannst du ProPlan Fortiflora auch präventiv oder bei alltäglichen Verdauungsbeschwerden einsetzen. Es unterstützt auch bei Ernährungsumstellungen oder Antibiotikaeinnahme. Purina ProPlan Fortiflora. Jetzt auf shop.purina.de.
Yo, yo, yo. Big up to Barry. Big up to Max. Big up to Joel, Silas, all the behind the scenes crew and all the listeners at this festive period. Hope you all have a fantastic time. And I just want to say that I really, really hope that everybody who's been abusing me because of my Chelsea take gives me the exact same energy in apologies when we do see, as predicted, Chelsea fall away pre-March. Have a lovely period off. Love you all. Take care.
Well, hello, everyone, from rainy southwestern Norway. Merry Christmas to everyone listening to this, including Max, Barry, and all the panelists, but mostly to you guys listening. Can I just say, as my festive message, that I strongly believe the Christmas Eve episode should be recorded in the studio with everyone there as God intended it. But apparently, people want to spend time with their families. I will never understand you people, but here we are. This is what you get. Merry Christmas.
Hi, this is Lucy Ward, just here to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a marvellous 2025. To all the listeners, especially Max and my best mate, Barry, in particular. Really enjoyed being part of the pod this year and looking forward to joining you all again next year. Have a marvellous one. Bye.
Hi all, Mark Langdon here. Just want to wish Max, Barry, and everyone else a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. It's been a very busy 2024. I think the highlight for me was being live in the room for Barry's Chef's Kiss.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Paul says, what was your annual of choice as a kid, shoot or match? John Bruin, we prepped you for this.
Well, the answer is shoot. And during lockdown, we all went through dark nights of the soul. Maybe you didn't. I did. So I decided to hit eBay and bought myself a collection of old shoots, some of which I actually bought back in the 80s, which were from the 70s. But I thought I'd turn to Shoot 1989, which I would have got for Christmas.
Oh, this is in my wheelhouse, John. I'm so excited. You could just read this for the rest of the pod. Yeah.
That's the year I left school.
Okay.
89?
Oh, no, sorry. It's not 91.
Okay. So on the cover, we have Brian McClair being tackled by Clive Wilson, I think that is, of Chelsea.
Yeah.
Picture of Rushy in a Juve shirt in 1989. So obviously this was made probably sometime early in 1988. Gary Lineker, Barcelona shirt, and the everyman who has survived all this, apart from Gary Lineker, Ali McCoist, the man who is still everywhere.
Do you know what Clive Wilson's middle name is?
Clive Wilson's middle name. I mean, this is really stretching. This is
Valentine.
I'd say it's a non-traditional middle name or name at all for anybody born in the last, I don't know, 6,000 years.
Zebediah.
Okay.
If I said he had a great understanding of the geometry of defending, does that help?
Pythagoras.
Pythagoras, yeah.
Euclid.
Ooh, wow.
Euclid. Wow. Okay. That's what you're here for. That's what you're here for. Anyway, carry on, John.
So yeah, we start with the captain's able, Brian Robson's column. Yeah. A tribute to Liverpool FC. I must have enjoyed that at the time. John Barnes. Big quiz. How the game's changed for battling Bonzo. That's Billy Bonds was still playing at this point. Yeah. Peter Beardsley, the great creator. I mean, you know, a picture there of Peter Jackson and Sheffield Wednesday midfielder Gary Megson do battle at Hillsborough. I mean, the juices are flowing here. This is how you get your turkey. Yeah. You know. Kevin Richardson, Paul Parker, Paul McStay confesses, I'm not a great player. Interesting headline. Dennis Wise, smash hits. There's a cartoon of, Robert Fleck, famously Hollywood looks of Robert Fleck.
Like to shoot early, they always said of him, didn't they? That was always his thing.
Jerry Francis. But actually, there's a duo mulleted. There's a late stage Frank Worthington, and still playing at this point, and Jerry Francis looking tanned and the mullet resplendent. Brian Clough and son, of course. Terry Butcher with wife, sort of. You know those one where they're over the sofa and cuddled.
Are you? I did wonder. Are you reading the whole of the Shoot annual? I thought you were going to pick out a couple of bits, but you know, I'm happy to listen.
Can you chuck us a couple of questions from the quiz?
Ooh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there is Peter Reed with what looks like dyed hair at that point. Reedy was trying to hold the the quiz. Where are we? Excuse me. Great listening this, but okay.
We can edit out the silences, Johnny. Be pleased. This isn't. You're not live.
Producer Joel will work his magic.
Here we go. The Shoot Quiz, 1989. Is it first on the buzzer? What's the rules, John?
I reckon your name is your buzzer.
Yeah. Okay. Why did Watford skipper Wilf Rostron miss the club's 1984 FA Cup final defeat by Everton?
Seasick.
Wilson. Was he suspended?
I think he's...
His former Sunderland player, Wilf Rostron. Yeah.
Suspended is such a boring answer.
Yeah, that's why I hesitated.
Honestly, these questions, they're sort of...
But this is back in the day where there's no way a footballer would miss a game to go to the birth of his child.
Yeah. Manchester United's Steve Bruce joined the club from Norwich. Which other league club has he played for?
Blackpool?
Wilson? Gillingham?
Correct.
Oh, really good. He's so good at it.
What was the Wilf Rostron answer?
He was suspended.
Oh, okay.
His last one. And I think Max could get this, but I know it's one of your favourites on the other radio show.
Rushton.
Trevor Hebbard.
Oh, Trevor Hebbard. Here we go, yeah.
Yes.
Rushton.
Yeah.
Oxford United.
Correct, yes.
I'm delighted.
What was the question?
Well, he scored the first goal for which club in the 1986? So yeah,
lovely.
And I knew Max would kill that one. Mm. Trevor Hebbard. Me and Max share, I think, a love for Trevor Hebbard, whoever he was.
Yeah.
He was sold by Jack Charlton from Newcastle for passing the ball too much.
Brilliant. That's glorious, isn't it? That's like Steve Claridge being subbed off by John Beck for cutting inside, even though it led to a goal, I think. Don't do that.
I've got a feeling Trevor Hebbard might have been Newcastle's record signing at the time as well.
Fred says, what's the best goal you've seen in the flesh? Obviously, Barry has his header, but what about the floating brain in a jar, the prog rocker, and obviously yourself, Max, the wet lefty cutting in from the right. Best goal you've seen in the flesh. Let's go for pure quality of goal. So I guess no context, no romance, just absolute sheer best goal you've seen.
I have no skin in the game whatsoever. James Dart, who's the boss man on the Guardian football website, is a Plymouth fan. We used to take in a Plymouth game every year when they played in London. And they got drawn against Barnet in the fourth round of the FA Cup in 2007. So myself and Doherty went to Underhill, where Barnet played at the time. Famously sloping pitch. And Plymouth were playing down the hill. Attendance, so it was January 2007, attendance 5,204. I've told this story many times before on...
You have, yes.
Football Weekly. But it was Scott Sinclair, who was 17 years old at the time. He was on loan at Plymouth from Chelsea. I think Holloway had signed him. Ian Holloway was manager of Plymouth. He'd signed him about 10 days previously on loan. And he came off the bench, picked up the ball on the edge of his own box. I can't remember the nitty-gritty. The goal is on YouTube. But he ran up the inside left, beat at least three players. And when he approached the bar in a penalty area, he was shepherded wide by a defender. He managed to rifle the ball into the roof of the net with the outside of his right foot, beat Barnet keeper Ross Flitney. And that is the greatest goal I've ever seen in the flesh. Flitney said afterwards, things like that happen in football and you've just got to applaud it. Ian Holloway compared him to Dash from The Incredibles. And I had a look to see if Scott Sinclair is still playing, and he is. He's playing for Bristol Rovers. He's 35 now, which makes me feel super old. So he went from, I think, Chelsea to QPR, Charlton, Crystal Palace, Wigan, Swansea, Man City, West Brom, Villa. He was at Celtic as well, I think, for a fair old stint. But yeah, currently at Bristol Rovers and still playing regularly.
I think, Barry, for you to accuse Bruin of doing a boring section and reading Scott Sinclair's Wikipedia.
Yeah, have that Glendening.
Yeah. I am probably going Gareth Bale's overhead kick in the Champions League final in Kyiv. There was a silence before everyone realised what had happened. I think that might be the best goal I've seen in the flesh.
James Rodriguez for Colombia against Uruguay. But if goals we've been ourselves involved in are allowed, I'll keep this brief. So it's my final game for my college. We've already won promotion. We need to win this game to win the title. We're playing as a college next door to big derby. There's 150 people turned up, which in college football is enormous. We've run out to ride of the Valkyries to try and whip everybody up. Within 3 minutes, I've won the ball in the centre circle, slipped the ball inside the fullback. The right winger, like Mark Alexander, he dithered on the ball all the time. But this pass was...
I went to school with him.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. I climbed Kilimanjaro with him, but you know, we've all got our stories. And he often dithered on the ball, but because the pass was weighted in such a way, he had to cross the ball first time, otherwise we would have gone out of play. And this lad, James Wormsley, comes in the back post with a header into the top corner. And the thing was, it just looked like a proper goal, a professional goal. I hadn't really thought about that goal for quite a while. And I saw James Wormsley for a drink earlier this week. I hadn't seen him in about a decade. And he's got two kids now, 8 and 10. And apparently, he's taught them my role in the Alexander role, and he gets them to act it out, and he does the header at the back post.
That's amazing. But that is the thing that, you know, and people listening to this will remember, like, goals they scored or they're involved in that mean nothing to anybody, but like inflicting it on your children.
Oh, we'll get to that, Max.
Oh, God. Well, I don't know. Like, the running order, it's slipping down the running order. Yeah, but inflicting it on my children, actually a brilliant idea. John, if you could be slightly briefer than the previous two respondents.
I'll go for two players readily compared. One is Gabriel Batistuta. I was at Old Trafford on the Stretford End when he walloped that one. And it seared towards us in that end. And then just, it's in the net and you think, wow. Yeah, that is a beauty. And the other is Macclesfield legend John Beast Parkin, fellow podcaster. Opening day of the season, 2004-05. Mac at Leighton Orient. I'd taken a group of friends and the girl I was sat with couldn't believe that John was an actual footballer, such was his body shape after a good summer by the looks of things. And he scored two of the best goals you're ever going to see. One, a speedy rounding of the goalkeeper scoring from an impossible angle, then a great volley. And I've always thought he was a great player who gave men of a certain body shape hope that they too could achieve great things in football. But yeah, Batistuta's goal, unbelievable.
Derv says, hey, Barry, Max and the gang, I have a signed picture of Ethan Pinnock. Is there any way that I can get it signed by Baz so it's a one-of-a-kind holy relic kind of thing, awaiting further instructions?
Well, yeah, absolutely. If he wants to get in touch with me via social media, Blue Sky or... yeah, Blue Sky is probably the best because I'm still struggling to figure out how... what's that other one that...
Instagram
email.
Works.
What's that other one?
Or email me at The Guardian. Email me at The Guardian. I can certainly arrange that. I actually have a CD cover for the Super Furry Animals debut album, Fuzzy Logic, which has... the illustration is just loads of different pictures of... the famously charismatic drug dealer Howard Marks in his various guises. And it's signed by all the band and Howard Marks. So I reckon in 200 years, Fiona Bruce and some expert will be telling some distant relative of mine that it's worth 5 million quid.
Wow. I mean, it's now time that I say... Before the quarterfinal of the FA Cup in 1990, when Cambridge played Crystal Palace, my dad rang the club because he didn't have a ticket. And they said, oh, we'll put you in the press box, because that's how it worked. And he sat next to Trevor Brooking, but he always took a book to the game just in case games got boring, even the FA Cup quarterfinal. So he was reading Plato's Republic. So I have a copy of Plato's Republic that when you open the cover, it says, Dear Max, all the best, Trevor Brooking.
I mean, if you could get Plato to sign that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, me and Jonathan used to do a bit of a routine of Trev, which was the way that he always had to sort of explain everything. He's like, yeah, it's a book, if you like, something that you read. You know, so you have to define what it is. It's like, you know, it's a philosophical text written by a Greek philosopher.
Well, I signed my name, which is a collection of sounds, which is how you identify me.
Yeah.
It's like none of you probably watched The Voice. It'll mean nothing to you, but Tom Jones on The Voice, you know, the reality show where they're facing away from the act, and you know all the other guests like press their button and spin round and go, Rita Ora says, I thought you were amazing, and Tom Jones presses the button and says, I've pressed my button, so that means my chair, it turns around, and now I can see you. And previously, I couldn't see you. I was just listening to you, and now I like what I see and hear. With apologies to Ellis James and all your Welsh brethren.
I'm very impressed, Max, that your father had sufficient clout to be able to just phone Cambridge United and command a seat for a big cup tie.
I don't think he had a clout. I just think that was how the club worked. They were like, oh, okay. Yeah, actually, we'll probably just get you one. He didn't say, do you know who I am?
Dr. Rushton.
He did.
I presume.
In 1990, he went, in about 18 years, your son will start the glory years of a popular TV, banterific TV show called Soccer Home. Sonny says, hi, Max, Barry and everyone. Following on from Chef's Kissgate and the Price of Crab Meat debacle, can Barry enlighten us as to his favourite TV chef and any culinary plans for the Christmas period?
Ooh, my favourite TV chef. I've got to say Ainsley Harriott.
Okay.
So much so that because I used to love Ready, Steady, Cook, you know, afternoon viewing, easy watching, red peppers, green peppers, all that. And I, not too long after I came to London, me and a then girlfriend were in Sainsbury's in Clapham Common, and we spotted Ainsley Harriott out doing his big shop. And I'm almost embarrassed to admit it. We basically stalked him around the supermarket, watching what he was putting in his trolley, just so we could get a bit of an insight into the Harriet lifestyle. But we were too afraid to approach him or speak to him.
He's so menacing, isn't he? He's such,
such a menacing man. But I have since met Ainsley, and he's a lovely, lovely, great lovely man. So he's a big gooner, I think. But yeah, lovely, lovely bloke.
Lovely story about Ainsley Harriott, Barry. And that'll do for part two. Here are some more messages from the Football Weekly family.
Hi, everyone. Just want to wish Max and Barry a very Merry Christmas.
Hello, Max and Barry.
As Eloise points out, no one really knows who they are. Mythical characters in their own right. But what a great show they put on. And in addition to that, I'd like to wish all of our listeners a very Merry Christmas, despite very few of them giving me freebies this year and listening to my inane anecdotes. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Hi, Troy Townsend here. Just wanted to wish the Guardian Football Weekly listeners a very, very Merry Christmas and all the best for the new year 2025. I suppose I better wish Max and Barry the same. Hope you two have a real blessed one and look forward to listening, being a part of and seeing you all in 2025. Take care for now.
Merry Christmas, Max and Barry and all the Football Weekly listeners, buon Natale, buon anno. I'm doing my best not to make the same joke I'm sure I make every year about making sure that you eat your panettone, unlike some Italian football managers.
Jetzt ist Herbst und bald stehen schon wieder die Feiertage vor der Tür. Das kann auch für Hunde ganz schön stressig sein. Viele Vierbeiner reagieren unter anderem mit einer gestörten Verdauung. Und das ist wiederum Stress für ihre Besitzer. Aber es gibt schnelle und einfache Hilfe. Das Probiotikum Purina Pro Plan Fortiflora. Streu einfach einen Beutel über das tägliche Futter. Die außergewöhnliche Zusammensetzung mit lebenden, guten Darmbakterien stellt das Gleichgewicht im Darm wieder her. Natürlich kannst du Pro Plan Fortiflora auch präventiv oder bei alltäglichen Verdauungsbeschwerden einsetzen. Es unterstützt auch bei Ernährungsumstellungen oder Antibiotikaeinnahme. Purina Pro Plan Fortiflora. Jetzt auf shop.purina.de.
Bonjour, ça va? Ja, ça va, Max. Merci. So to you, to Barry, to everybody who's been on the Football Weekly through this year, and to all of you who've listened to us patiently, a very happy new year and a very Merry Christmas. Un joyeux Noël et mes meilleurs voeux pour une belle année 2025. So see you there. Bye-bye.
Hello, Football Weekly fans. Robin Cowan here. A quick message from me to wish you all a peaceful Christmas. A new addition to my family this year means the podcast has taken on an even more essential role in keeping me company and semi-sane during long sleepless nights. And like Max, wondering why I squandered the child-free time I once had. Anyway, no regrets. See you in the new year.
Hi everyone, Sani here. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing this time of year, hope it goes okay. If you're with your in-laws, I hope it's tolerable. From all the Rudra Vagilers, what can we say?
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Hello, everyone. Commentator Seb Hutchinson here, wishing all you listeners, as well as Max, Barry, and the rest of the festive bunch, a very Merry Christmas. And may all your football wishes in particular come true.
This is Paul Watson saying Happy Christmas to the listeners, all the panellists, to Max and to Barry. I hope you have a lovely festive break. But don't forget, if you're really desperate, there is Ethiopian Second Division football on Christmas Day.
Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Sid Lowe writes, I was wondering if, with it being Christmas Eve and all, if Jonathan could recommend any books that might make good presents.
Yes, I very much could. I mean, Inverting the Pyramid is a classic, but I imagine most people have that. Ends of the Dirty Face has been updated to include the World Cup final. If you can't be bothered to read Inverting the Pyramid, there's now, it's in poster form, so you just have to look at it. You can get that from the Blizzard website. I think it's on Etsy as well, which is very exciting to design something that's on Etsy. My Charlton's book is in paperback now. My Clough book was updated this year, so a whole range of options.
Okay, so only books by yourself, Wilson. I mean, the question, you could have taken it anyway, but notice.
Well, okay.
You know, what else do we need?
I think, I mean, I'm not just necessarily a Christmassy book, although it is like small enough to fit in a stocking. Daisy Custodio's book on VAR, I can't stop thinking about VAR, which is, I think, lays out all the issues of VAR and potential solutions in an incredibly sort of intelligent and clear and quite succinct way. So
that is an Arthur Fowler Christmas reading. That, I mean, imagine just, oh no, like they're ruining the game.
Sasha Hemond's new novel is in paperback. That's not that new, but The World and All That Holds. I think that's the best novel I've read for a long time.
Okay, good. Rick says, what's the best goal Barry's ever scored? Oh, God. Stephen says, can Barry explain his magnificent headed goal for newer listeners? Esbart says, has Barry ever headed a goal perfectly? And if so, can he retell the experience? Just make it brief.
Okay.
Because we were going to get some extra insight, but you failed us.
I've let everyone down. Look, everyone knows the story of my header that went in off the post and then Beaver, the goalkeeper, Jordan Jarrett Bryan, Mr. Buzzkill, has subsequently pointed out was actually an own goal and not my goal. But yeah. I had hoped to get Michael Littleton, who famously crossed the ball to me, on the show to talk us through his version of events. I sent him a WhatsApp message. I got the blue ticks and he didn't reply. So I didn't want to harass him. We are still good friends. I did ask him. He didn't reply. Maybe he thought I was taking the piss. I don't know, but maybe next year he it was a sincere request, so maybe next year he could come on and tell us. I would also ask Beaver, but I'm almost certain Beaver doesn't remember it, and I can't remember Beaver's actual name. So
I will say absolutely categorically that Wormsley would happily come on and describe his header.
I'm afraid, Mr. Wormsley, it just hasn't reached a level yet where people are invested. No. But if we keep telling it every year, Wilson.
I would say my goal, the goal Eddie Nketiah scored for Crystal Palace the other night against Arsenal, that rang a few bells. That was quite like my header, except he didn't hit the post. And he was in front of a proper goalkeeper.
Yeah. When you sold your header, I was envisaging much more than that Eddie Nketiah header in a Carabao Cup quarterfinal. A goal that didn't even matter. But anyway, right, let's do some, some classic requests and some lovely emails. Aisha says, hi, Football Weekly team. My husband, Harry, is a massive fan of the podcast and talks about it a lot. Good for you, Harry. He turns 30 on Christmas Eve, and I've committed to the ambitious task of finding 30 non-terrible unique gifts. And I'm scraping the barrel somewhat, which is where we come in, clearly. I think a shout-out on the podcast would count as a good gift, so could I please ask you if it would be possible to do the honours on whichever episode is closest to Christmas Eve? Thank you so much. Best wishes. Aisha, this feels closest to Christmas Eve with it being Christmas Eve. Barry, Harry is 30. Could you wish him happy birthday?
Very happy birthday, Harry. Aisha is certainly scraping the bottom of the barrel. If she needs any other presents, last ditch, James Dart, who I mentioned earlier, has got several 1,000 Guardian Football Weekly mugs and half and half scarves in boxes behind his desk in Guardian Towers. John Broome's holding up 2 Guardian mugs. So, yeah, just go and get however many you need to make up the shortfall. But, yeah, happy birthday, Harry. And have a very Merry Christmas, Harry and Aisha.
Yeah, we should publicise selling that merch a bit more, shouldn't we? Lucas says, "Dear Guardian Football Weekly, long-time listener, I'm wondering if I can put a request in from Barry. My daughter, first child, Orla Phelan Manella, was born this week. We live in France, so I didn't have the nerve to spell it O-R-F-H-L-A-I-T-H, though her mum wanted to. My paternity leave fortuitously aligns with the holiday fixture logjam, so her first days will be filled with many a nervous bounce from me. I'd love a well-wishing from Barry, as she will likely be hearing his and your voices much more than she'd like to over the next 18-plus years. You're confident this is going to last that long. Also, any advice for her obligatory Arsenal fandom and the suffering and general madness I'm inflicting upon her? Thanks, all the best. Lucas Manella." Yes, Barry. Orla is potentially our youngest listener to this pod.
Lucas, I think my first inclination is to call social services for inflicting goonerdom upon young Orla. But
do you think Orla already is a conspiracy theorist? And thinks
she hates VAR.
First words, referee!
She thinks I'm one of the big media, part of the big conspiracy who are out to do down her team.
And what was your first word? It was agenda. That's it's what it was.
I haven't said the words here. This is not me. Why do I always get the blame
for this? Three letters, V-A-R.
I am hopeful that by the time Orla is old enough to listen and understand what we're talking about, Arsenal still won't have won the league. And Mikel Arteta will be long gone. And who'll be in charge? Who'll be in charge? Say in 7 or 8 years, it'll be...
Russell Martin.
In 8 years' time? The Arsenal manager in 8 years' time? It's a great question. It will be...
Ruben Amorim.
Nah.
Theo Walcott.
Cesc Fabregas.
Ooh, good show.
Yeah, Cesc Fabregas is not a bad show, not a bad is show. It?
Okay, I think it could be Fabian Hertzler.
Also good show. Yeah. Okay. Although you feel maybe that's ended now, the Brighton to Chelsea drift.
I would love if in 7 years' time, when Orla is old enough to, you know, be aware of what's going on in football world, it will be either Sean Dyche or Big Sam.
A couple of longer emails to finish with. Pierce says, it's a lovely message from Pierce. It says, "Dear Max, Barry, and wonderful panellists. Cleaning up for Christmas, I found this draft for an email I started 2 years ago, but never finished because I couldn't look at a screen long enough to finish the email. Now I can, so I thought I'd send it to you and finish. So we go back to December 2022. Dear Max, Barry, and wonderful panellists. In March this year, I fell off my bike and I got a concussion. Long story short, due to complications in my nervous system, I haven't been able to work since then. When I'm in the company of my friends or family for more than a couple of hours, severe pain starts in my head and body. I haven't been to the pub to watch my beloved Liverpool for 10 months. I used to never miss a game there. For a while, I couldn't even watch the games at home. Looking at a screen starts the cruelest of pains in my head. I just listened to the commentary and only looked at the screen for goals. But I could listen to the pod, and I have every single episode. You helped me keep up with the footy, but most importantly, you've kept me company. I'm getting better. I can watch the games at home now, but I miss the gang at the pub so much. Just hanging out, talking about footy, everything and nothing. ... Now to December 2024. So thank you so much for keeping me company and being my Liverpool pub substitute for more than a year. And thank you for still keeping me company every step of the way back to a normal, healthy life, figuratively and literally. Part of me getting stronger and healthy again has been through walks from 10 minutes in the beginning to 15 kilometres last weekend. Blimey. You've been with me in my headphones for every step, except for the 15 kilometres last weekend. I did that walk with my sister, so no headphones, but you were still with us since she's also a dedicated fan of the pod, and we of course debate your views on the footy and life in general. She too has been my rock where things seemed hopeless. I could call her, cry my heart out, and when she had helped me get a perspective on things again, we changed the subject to lighter matters like football and the panellists' latest points on something or other. The pods helped us connect and cheered me and her up, when there really wasn't much to be cheerful for. But today there is. 1,000 days later, I'm back to work full time. I'm back at the pub for most Liverpool games. And though I still have symptoms from the trauma, they're fading more and more. I'm now convinced that this too shall pass. I continue with my walks and putting the headphones on for yet another Football Weekly episode. Just feels like coming home. So again, thanks for keeping me and everyone else in difficult life situations company. In the grand scheme of things, what you do doesn't matter. And at the same time, it matters the most. Kind regards and holiday greetings from Pia and my sister Gita, I'm sure, in Denmark. So Pia, thank you. We send you our love.
I cannot recommend enough the benefits of a very long walk. They're just top drawer for clearing your head. I obviously don't listen to us, but I listen to Ellis James and Mike Bobbins and John Robbins and various other people and try to walk 6 or 7 miles a day. There's a lot to be said for it.
We're going to finish on a lovely and heartbreaking email from Emily. And thank you so much for writing to us. Genuinely, we didn't know if this was the right way to finish like an upbeat Christmas Eve episode, but it does mean so much that you shared it with us. And, you know, this is probably a normal holiday time, family, friends, fun, not fun, normal Christmas for lots of people and for us, but it isn't for everyone. And, you know, you brought that into stark reality for me when I first read it. Emily writes, Dear Football Weekly, I lost my husband, Nick, 5 weeks ago. He was 44. Your podcast remains the number one source of I should tell him, oh, moments, which remain the worst part of what I can assure you is a genuinely awful experience. Our shared love of this stupid, beautiful sport was one of the great joys of our relationship, and this podcast was part of that. I'm in the moderately unusual position of being an American woman who watches football, so I don't really have anyone here to ask about this. Could someone please tell me about how they lost someone and they could eventually watch a match again without crying? Sorry for the Christmas downer. If I've ruined someone's vasectomy, I'm very sorry. best of all, Emily. I'm not going to lie, Emily. It is a Christmas downer, but, without overstating what this podcast is or, you know, what podcasts are in general, whatever you listen to, I think it is being part of a big family, isn't it, for a lot of people? So, you know, we try not to airbrush anything out when we talk about the game, so we shouldn't just, like, leave you to grieve on your own. That would be really shit. So thank you for getting in touch. Like, I'm really lucky to have no experience that can compare with what you are going through right now. I don't know if anyone on the panel can share anything, not necessarily to, you know, say, here's the answers, because that's not how it works, is it? My knowledge of grief is that it changes over time. It never goes away, but...
Yeah, well, my old man died almost 3 years ago to the day, and sorry.
It's all right.
Now, all I'd say to Emily is the grief doesn't go away. It gets time, makes it, teaches you how to cope with it better. My dad died almost 3 years ago to the day, and at least her husband Nick knew what a podcast was, which is more than Sam Glendening did. So yeah, I mean, my heart goes out to Emily. It will get easier with time, but yeah, it must be rough.
I'm very conscious that the loss of a partner is different to the loss of a parent, that one of those is a thing that sort of feels natural. You know, it's the way the world's meant to be. And I think losing a partner, and you know, I have some experience of this through somebody very close to, is different. But I don't know if you remember when Sunderland won the Papa John's. And...
Amazingly, I do, but not very well.
It happened to be on Mother's Day, and it was the 73rd day of the year, and obviously 37-73 because of winning the cup in 37-73, a sort of significant day for Sunderland fans. But that was the first time that I was really able to let go. That was coming home from that game, I was in absolute bits. It was during COVID, there's nobody about. It'd been a very odd experience of being a near empty Wembley. But the thought of not just my marriage, my dad who died quite a long time ago, the sadness that they didn't witness that, was what really set me going. With parents, obviously, I'd my early experience of going to football was with my dad, but as you get older, you start going with other people. And so it's not as immediate if your experience of football is always with your partner. So I hope that that becomes easier in time, but I think there will always be moments with football where you remember that bond, that love. And that's a good thing, eventually.
It's one in the eye for people who think the Papa John's or whatever it's called now is shit, isn't it?
Look, if they want to get me to do the adverts, I'm happy to recreate that.
Yeah, when I was in my late 20s, I lost my best friend that I used to go and watch United with. And when she talks about it not being quite the same, that's pretty much been the case for me ever since, really, with watching United. Something was lost with the closeness that I had with that particular friend. And as regards the grief aspect of it, I think what both of you, all of you said is correct. It just changes. It doesn't really go away. And the thing is, though, what I will say about that, that to get to a point where I think about my friend and you're able to smile and remember the good bits. You know, if you see a United moment, he was there when we watched the United win the Champions League, I was with him. There was a point where I couldn't watch that at all because of the friend you've lost. But you never get over it. That's the truth. It changes and becomes part of you. Let's put it that way.
And he has missed the last 10 years of absolute shite. So, yeah.
Yes, well, he I had to suffer the bad bit. That's true.
Well, look, Emily, we absolutely... Our hearts go out to you. We send you all our love. And from everyone involved in making this, which is basically me and Joel, but I guess Barry and everyone else. And all the panellists, everyone involved with the pods and everyone above that helps make it happen. We send you our love and that'll do for today. Thank you, Barry.
Thank you. Happy Christmas, everyone.
Thanks, Wilson.
Happy Christmas. Thank you.
Cheers, John.
Cheers. All the best.
Happy Christmas, everybody. Football Weekly is produced by Joel Grove. And our executive producer is Phil Maynard. We're taking an extended break and we'll be back in 3 days' time.
This is The Guardian.